This is ExpertHR.com, your go-to HR compliance resource for federal, state, and municipal law. I'm David Weisenfeld for ExpertHR.com, published by Reed Business Information and proudly partnered with LexisNexis. The Supreme Court heard nearly 90 minutes of arguments in March in a high-stakes Affordable Care Act case that affects the future of the 2010 health care law. At stake in King versus Burwell is whether Congress intended nationwide tax credits when it passed the ACA, or whether tax subsidies were only meant for purchases on a state-run exchange. Since 34 states do not have their own exchange and rely on the federal marketplace, a ruling against the government would significantly undercut the ACA and put millions at risk of potentially losing their health insurance. Neil Katyal served as acting Solicitor General, the government's top lawyer, for 1 year during President Obama's first term. He now heads the appellate practice at Hogan Lovells in Washington, D.C. Katyal filed an amicus brief in the case on behalf of the American Hospital Association and pulled no punches regarding its importance.
The health insurance of 9 million Americans plus are at stake in this case, all potentially taken away. These are people who have never had insurance before. For the first time, they've been able to have it under the Affordable Care Act. And if this novel interpretation by the challengers is accepted by the Supreme Court, it's going to be devastating for the consequences to Americans and their health.
But the lawyer representing the challengers, Michael Carvin, claims that the Affordable Care Act authorizes the tax subsidy only to buyers on a state-run exchange. Referring to the statute, Carvin told the justices, the act says exchanges established by the state, not by the Federal Department of Health and Human Services. Carvin explained his point further following the oral arguments.
A clear purpose of the statute was to encourage states to establish their own exchanges, which is dramatically undermined and frustrated by the IRS rule, which provides subsidies regardless of whether the states do that required task.
But inside the courtroom, several justices expressed serious concerns about the ramifications of accepting Carvin's claims. For instance, Justice Sonia Sotomayor told Carvin if the court were to read the ACA in the way he was saying, then costs would rise on every insurance plan offered in the country in those 34 states without their own exchanges. What's more, Justice Sotomayor noted pointedly, no one's going to visit the program if there are no subsidies, because not enough people will buy the programs to stay in the exchanges. And it wasn't just on the left where the challenger's attorney faced tough questioning. Justice Anthony Kennedy, a frequent swing voter on the court, also expressed reservations about Carvin's argument as a practical matter.
It does seem to me that there's something very powerful to the point that if your argument is accepted, the states are being told either create your own exchange or we'll send your insurance market into a death spiral. We'll have people pay mandated taxes, which will not get any credit on the subsidies. Cost of insurance will be sky high, but this is not coercion. It seems to me that under your argument, there's a serious constitutional problem if we adopt your argument.
Meanwhile, Justice Elena Kagan said the ACA needed to be read as a whole instead of focusing on four or five words that would lead to a result Congress never intended. That's a point Solicitor General Donald Verrilli, Jr. made repeatedly in arguing for the administration. He told the justices that the challenger's reading of the ACA would make a mockery of the statute and force the Department of HHS to establish rump exchanges that are doomed to fail. But Justice Antonin Scalia seemed rather dubious, as shown in this exchange with the Solicitor General.
It precipitates the insurance market death spirals that the statutory findings specifically say the statute was designed to avoid. And, of course, it revokes the promise of affordable care for millions of Americans. That cannot be the statute that Congress intended.
Of course it could be. I mean, it may not be the statute they intended. The question is whether it's the statute that they wrote.
Justice Scalia later added that under Verrilli's argument, every law must make sense. And if it does not, then the Supreme Court must twist the words as necessary to have it do so.
Ilya Shapiro of the libertarian Cato Institute expanded on Scalia's point following the argument. Shapiro filed an amicus brief in the case on the challenger's behalf.
This case turns on the meaning of by. Does established by the state mean the same as established in a state or for a state or on behalf of a state? There's no ambiguity there. And just the fact that Congress or some people might not like the result that their statute creates is not a reason for the Supreme Court to rewrite the law and create other kinds of results. That's for Congress and the states to decide after their ruling.
But inside the courtroom, Solicitor General Donald Verrilli, Jr. expressed great skepticism about Congress's ability to craft a solution if the Supreme Court sided with the challengers. Verrilli also insisted that their reading of the ACA would be unduly coercive on the states. However, in response, Justice Samuel Alito wondered how come only 6 of the 34 states without their own health exchanges had signed the government's brief. Oklahoma Attorney General Scott Pruitt was on hand for the oral argument and said the fact that so few states had supported the government's brief was no accident. Pruitt claimed his state and others had made a clear choice not to set up a state health care exchange, adding that the issue was about more than just federal subsidies.
When you invite the subsidies in your state, you're also inviting the employer mandate penalty in your state and the individual mandate for it when its enforcement. This is a comprehensive challenge based upon a single section of law.
But also speaking outside the Supreme Court, former Acting Solicitor General Neil Katyal vigorously countered the Oklahoma Attorney General's contention.
This isn't an ambiguous provision. This is a provision that everyone understood at the time to provide subsidies to both federal and state exchanges.
An interesting sidelight to this landmark ACA dispute was whether the challengers had the right to bring the case at all. The four plaintiffs are Virginia residents who don't want to purchase health insurance on the Federal Department of HHS exchange. Since Virginia is one of the states that declined to establish its own exchange, the state uses the federal system. The plaintiffs claim that if not for the federal subsidies, they would qualify for the ACA's unaffordability exemption for people whose health insurance costs would exceed 8% of their incomes. But some reports have questioned whether the four would actually suffer the injuries needed to bring a case. And Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg was clearly thinking along those lines. For instance, she pointed out at the argument's outset that at least one of the plaintiffs had to have a stake in the questions presented, noting they can't put them as ideological questions. By the end, it seemed unlikely the case would be dismissed on standing grounds alone. But it did seem that the Affordable Care Act might just survive this latest challenge, in part because of concerns about what a contrary result might mean for both the ACA and for residents in the 34 states without their own health exchange. Justice Elena Kagan expressed that concern in questioning the plaintiff's attorney, Michael Carvin.
You're essentially setting up a system in which these federal exchanges, that there will be no customers, and in fact there will be no products, because Section 1311 says that the exchange shall make health plans available to qualified individuals, and then the next section says that qualified individual means an individual who resides in the state that established the exchange. So under your theory, if federal exchanges don't qualify as exchanges established by the state, that means federal exchanges have no customers.
But perhaps not surprisingly, Justice Antonin Scalia had a decidedly different view and focused instead on the federal-state relationship.
How can the federal government establish a state exchange? That is gobbledygook.
In 2012, the Supreme Court narrowly upheld the legality of the Affordable Care Act in a 5-4 decision, which saw Chief Justice John Roberts provide the decisive vote. Last year, the court carved away at one provision of the act in Burwell versus Hobby Lobby. In that case, the justices held 5-4 that the ACA's contraceptive coverage mandate substantially burdens the constitutional rights of employers with a religious objection to providing such coverage. The court made clear, though, that its holding was limited to the contraceptive coverage mandate. As for the present ACA case of King versus Burwell, a decision is expected by the end of the Supreme Court's term in late June. But however the court rules, debates over the ACA appear far from over. For Expert HR, I'm David Weisenfeld. Continue checking our website regularly for more podcasts on key employment topics affecting the world of HR. Recent programs include a practical look at how employers can avoid running afoul of the Affordable Care Act, plus the latest developments involving leave law protections.
The opinions expressed in this program do not represent legal advice, nor should they necessarily be taken as the views of Expert HR or its employees. ExpertHR.com is published by Reed Business Information and is proudly partnered with LexisNexis. For more information about Expert HR and our subscription offering, call us toll-free at 1-855-973-7847. Again, that's 1-855-973-7847. And if you mention listening to this podcast, we'll give you 20% off a new subscription. Copyright 2015, all rights reserved.